All right, g'day, Novocastrians, and welcome to the last preview of Season 12 with this 2017 Grand Final Jetstream Preview podcast episode presented by NewcastleFootball.net. Ferns is here solo for the last time for this third preview episode of the 2017 A-League Final Series. We hope you've enjoyed these extra few podcasts. If you have or haven't, please give us some feedback via any of the contact details. Just click on the episode notes. Twitter, Facebook, email, or NewcastleFootball.net forums are all in there. Please also get in contact with us if you have any questions for Jets CEO Laurie McKinna, or any questions for our for the Jetstream contributors for our end of season review podcast episode, which are both going to be recording this Friday, the 5th of May. Really have to extend our gratitude to the opposition contributors who have joined us over the course of the season, but especially those who joined us for this finals episodes. Maddie from Talking City, Brendan from Around the Block, Ben from the Rawcast, and Blaine from the Far Post Perth podcast. The fan culture in the media space in the A-League is growing all the time, and fan podcasts are a great way for supporters to get more involved with their team and with the league. These are all done by volunteers in their own time who only get paid in compliments, so please send these guys your appreciation for the work they do via their social media channels. Okay, so the 2017 A-League draws to a close this Sunday, with the grand final being held at Allianz Stadium. Sees Premier Sydney FC going for the championship against their rivals Melbourne Victory. Kickoff is at 5 p.m. and the match is live on Fox Sports or on delay on SBS Viceland. To preview the game, I first spoke to Southie from The Cove to review the win against Perth, bitch about the VAR system, and then preview the final from the Sydney FC side of things. Then I spoke to Jason from the For Vuck's Sake podcast to chat about Victory's season, the coach Kevin Muscat, the narrow win against Brisbane, and then what Melbourne will need to do to spoil Sydney's party. So here is the chat with Southie from The Cove. All right, so we're very very pleased to welcome back Southie from The Cove, mate. How are you doing?
Yeah, good, mate. A bit nervous, but the week's been interesting.
Yeah, well, the grand final week will do that to you, especially with all the talk going on in the lead up to it. But we'll get to that in a minute. Obviously, we'll talk over the game that took place on the weekend to get you into the grand final, which was a 3-0 win, 3-0 win over the Perth Glory. Obviously, started off with a thunder bastard from Brillante. That must have been quite the scenes in the ground at 21 minutes.
100%. I think it's his second A-League goal ever, so it's a pretty good goal for his second one anyway.
Yeah, it's a bit of a shame that there's not a few more of those scored, because I absolutely love calling them thunder bastards. It's one of my favourite words. And obviously you had your other two goals were scored by Jordy Boyge and Philip Holosko. Made it all count in the first half and cruise in the second. Was that sort of how you saw the game overall?
Yeah, 100%. I think Sydney held on just to make sure that Perth didn't have any chances. That second half was kind of boring, to be honest. I was expecting a couple more goals down our end, but obviously it didn't happen, and, you know, VAR was our friend on the night.
Well, we'll talk about VAR in a minute, but how did you see the Glory side of things? Were they just lacking that sharpness in the final third to make any possession that they had count, or was it just basically Sydney dominating possession and weren't really letting Glory have a sniff?
Look, I think it's a bit of both. You know, whilst I did say Castro was someone to watch, he didn't really challenge anything too hard. And I don't know, I think the pitch even played a bit of a into our hands, to be honest. I know most of the Glory players weren't used to playing on a cow paddock, it was.
Yeah. Well, we'll definitely talk about the pitch in talking about the grand final preview. But so obviously you touched on it before. The VAR was used a number of times during the game. First and foremost, how did it affect the actual the game itself being in the stadium? Could you actually tell was there much of a break in play? Did they go back to it? Did it sort of stuff up the rhythm of the active support? Sort of how did it all unfold from an in-game perspective?
Look, as an in-game perspective, like the first goal, which was the Jordy Boyce one, which was given and then taken back because of the linesman, we were halfway celebrating through and, you know, getting into our celebration chants, and then up comes VAR and we're like, wait, what happened? And then it really killed it off, to be honest. Like, whilst we celebrated, it wasn't like that instantaneous celebration. You sit there and you're like, is it a goal, isn't it? And it kind of stunted the active supporter, in my own opinion.
Did they get it right, do you think? Were the decisions that the VAR made, were they correct?
To be honest, one was 50-50 and the other one was correct. The one where Bobo's obstructing, or you could say, timing his own run, it really was a 50-50 call.
Yep.
And I would have rather just been blown off as no, and then us still get the second one. I think the second one was a goal.
All right. Well, do you think the obviously being in a game that's had it being used, do you think it's is it something you think is going to be worthwhile down the track once they iron out all the bugs with it, or do you think it's something that we really don't it would be nice, but just no way to really implement it properly in a game of football that's continuous? Is not we haven't got these big breaks in play that the egg ball codes do.
Yeah, look, to be honest, football is made for people, not robots. And I really don't want VAR in the in our game. Humans make mistakes, and football, you make mistakes and you lose and you win by those. I don't think VAR should stay around, to be honest.
Well, it'll be interesting to see what happens, because obviously we're the test bed for it. They're letting us use it, and then obviously they'll go away and see whether it's worthwhile. But I remember hearing on a podcast in the last couple of days that it's something like $500,000 they're having to spend to get this system happening. So, you got to think of whether it's actually worth the money or not. That's a massive expense on top of the goal line technology, which is also not cheap either. Are we taking the elite level of the game too far away from its grassroots?
100%, and I think as I said, it's a human game. It's not a game for robots. Spending so much money on that, I guess when it's big money to be won, I can kind of understand why you would do it. But in the A-League, what money do you get from winning the A-League?
Yeah, not much. Well, any money you do get, the FFA takes, so because it's their final series. All right, so just to finish off on that game, there was there any injuries or any other issues that come out of the wash-up?
Yeah, look, burning a beanie towards the end of the game, I think it was about the 88th or 85th minute, around there, seems to have done a hamstring injury. He's been watching on at training, but not training at full strength, so I have high doubts that he's going to make this grand final.
All right. Well, that's definitely going to take some strength off your bench. Who do you think comes in to replace him?
I don't think he can replace Bernie. He's a really good player. You're going to see probably a youth player thrown in.
Blackwood?
No, he's not the type of player for Bernie. Blackwood's more of a Bobo replacement, Ross replacement. You might see Bay Antonio, or maybe one of the Koluski, one of the young boys from the youth team, but who knows yet? Yep. I haven't got any inside word yet.
All right. Well, make sure you text Graham after this after the interview, mate, so that you can get the word out on the street. Obviously, the Dolan Warren Awards took place. We're recording this on Wednesday night, so they took place on Tuesday, which also was a good result for Sydney FC, with Holosko winning, and I believe you also won the Women's Award as well.
Holosko didn't win anything. It's Ninkovic.
Oh, Ninkovic. Sorry, not Holosko. Ninkovic.
Yeah, so actually talking about Ninkovic, I actually saw a Serbian newspaper article saying that Sydney FC are going to pay to have his family fly over to Sydney to stay. So he may be staying at Sydney after all. But, Ninkovic, well-deserved Johnny Warren medalist. He's been our best player on the field. And even off the field, he's a great character, great person. A little shy, but really, really decent, down-to-earth guy.
Yep. And the women's, was it Sam Kerr that won that?
I think Sam Kerr is Perth. Oh, she's Perth.
Just goes to show how much attention I pay to the W League.
But it was Remy who won the Young Footballer. She plays for Sydney FC from Man United as well. She won the Young Footballer of the Year.
Nice. So I'm just pulling up the list of winners now. And, yeah, so Sam Kerr from Perth won it. Nikovic from Sydney FC won it. Yeah, so you're the W League now, Young Footballer of the Year was the one you mentioned. Graham Arnold won the Coach of the Year. Despotovsky, and Danny Vukovic also won. Also won his award for Goalkeeper of the Year, but you know, at least he won something. Didn't get to go to Beijing. All right, so so we'll get into the grand final preview, mate. So like you said, so Sunday, 5 p.m. kickoff at Allianz Stadium. I'll run through the head-to-heads as I'm doing for both you and Melbourne Victory. So overall, 11 Sydney wins in this game, 17 draws and 13 Melbourne Victory wins. At Allianz, Sydney FC 6 wins, 9 draws and only 4 Melbourne Victory wins. The last loss you had against Melbourne Victory was a 3-1 defeat. I believe it was away back in the early 2016, October 2016. So you guys have had a pretty good streak running over Melbourne Victory for the last couple of games.
Yeah, well, to be honest, we haven't lost them this season, but when you come to a grand final, form means a little bit, but previous games mean nothing. You know, Musket's going to be analysing every single thing that we've done against him already, and Sydney are going to try and find something different for Musket's team. I think we've had a good stint since we lost against them in the grand final.
Yep. And
our boys are fired up to, you know, make that better for us.
How, obviously, considering the victories you guys have had in your grand finals, how much of an advantage is it to have the home game at Allianz?
Not much of one when the pitch is a piece of crap. But to be honest, I've seen more grand finals at the SFS for other teams than I have for Sydney FC. So I think it's good for us, but in the long run, it's just a venue.
Yep.
Form will be there, but, you know, both teams are going to come out firing at each other. So they're going to be hungry. Melbourne Victory want the upset and, you know, to give it to one of their old rivals and, you know, rub salt into a wound where, you know, you could almost say the Wanderers did the same by beating us the one game that we've lost. So, you know, I think Victory would love to be able to take that glory from our season away.
Oh yeah, most definitely. But you know, it's the same with any big rivalry. It's definitely gonna be interesting to see how it plays out. Starting lineup or tactics from Graham Arnold, do you think it's gonna change much from what you saw in the previous final game against Perth Glory? Is he going to tweak anything?
I reckon there'll be slight tweaks. And I think you'll find that, you know, yeah, I think Ninkovic will start again for the 60 minutes. I believe that, you know, it'll be the same squad will go on, but then you'll have a couple different changes. You might see Dimitrovic get some time. Carney will get probably a little bit more game time this time.
Yep.
But I think the other thing is you've got to sit there and wonder how much you throw at it within the first 90, because obviously if a player gets injured or, you know, we run out of subs, it could go into extra time. So
yeah,
that's also going to play a factor.
Yeah, definitely. Obviously, you touched on the pitch, which is obviously the big story with this grand final week, trying to see if they could get New South Wales Waratahs to relocate to a different venue. But that's obviously from the word in the media, that's obviously not going to happen now. Was there any reason why they couldn't shove them next door at the SCG? Like, is it really going to be that much of a pain to put them next door for a game rather than trying to ship them off to North Sydney Oval with no corporate facilities and no public transport or even ANZ?
I actually think the Swans are playing at the same time as Sydney
SC. Really? Okay.
Which that is a factor for everything. I think that, you know, even with our march and stuff, everything's being worked around because the Swans are playing. As for putting the Waratahs somewhere else, I if you follow me on Twitter, I've been having a little bit of rant at the SCG and also, well, the SCG Trust and also ANZ Stadium. No one's using that stadium at all this weekend.
Yeah.
It's absolutely free. It would almost... Would you move the grand final there? Well, no, because you lose that atmosphere. Like, having 40 or 50,000 in that stadium, well, it's nice. You don't get that same vibe as you're going to get at Allianz. So I can see why Sydney won't move. As for the Waratahs, well, you know, fuck Waratahs. I can't understand why they wouldn't move, but I can't. But it just pisses me off.
Yeah, well, I mean, that was the thing. I wasn't referring to Sydney FC moving to the SCG. I meant, why don't they put the Waratahs at the SCG? Because it's going to be ripped up by the AFL the following day anyway. So it's not really going to be disadvantaging anybody. So, you know, obviously they'd have to have a short turnaround on line markings, but obviously that's not something that the Trust and the Waratahs and Sydney FC and the FFA and everybody else would want to work out. So yeah, it's a bit of a shame that the pitch is possibly looking spoiled, although I noticed that the Trust have come out and said that their groundskeepers are basically going to be working 24 hours straight from the full-time whistle at the Waratahs game to kick off at the A-League game. So we'll see whether that actually bears any fruit, I suppose. There's not really much you can do about it. It's going to affect both teams equally, so you know, it's going to disadvantage both, but you want to see that sort of spectacle and that sort of showcase event taking place on a proper surface where both teams are going to be able to play decent attacking football with the ball on the deck and zipping around and not bobbling around all over the place.
Yeah, 100%. I reckon what you're going to see, though, is a lot of green sand.
Yeah, definitely.
They're just going to spray paint the sand green.
Yep, and they're also going to spray paint over the sponsorship logos, which is another bloody problem because, you know, there's digital advertising now. There's no reason to be spray painting logos on the pitch. The A-League doesn't do it. We use the angled tarps behind the home ends. So I don't understand why they're still doing that for the egg ball codes. But you know, that's why we don't follow them. Anyway, all right. So Sydney FC players, what do you think? Who are the players that are going to be pivotal to you guys to get over the line against Melbourne?
Look, it's going to be all defence. We need to shut down Berisha. We need to shut down Troisi. They're up front. They're really, really strong in the victory. And that's where, obviously, they're going to win a game by scoring against us. In defence, I don't see them that solid. So it's kind of keep us solid at the back and try and counter or get them on the back foot.
And so you're seeing their weaknesses being in defence?
100%.
Yep. Not their midfield?
Oof. Maybe.
Well, I said, you know, having spoken to the victory guys already, they see the major area of opportunity, if you like, being their midfield, because not as strong as you guys, because obviously you've got Brilliante and O'Neill in there, and obviously Ninkovic as well. So yeah, definitely, I think that's where you may have the strength over them, as well as the strength of players you can bring onto the park. I think their bench is probably a little bit lackluster. They've got a really good starting 11, and Rojas is probably another player that your defence is going to have to worry about to add on top of the Berisha and Troisi conundrum. But yeah, it's possibly their depth and the squad, the players that they have on their bench that might be the area of opportunity for you guys. You can bring some players on and keep the tempo going, whereas you know, once some of their starting 11 goes off, that sort of tends to see their levels dip off a bit.
I think, you know, even when you mentioned Brilliante and that, you still got Dimitrovic off the bench, so
yeah,
he's going to be, I reckon he'll get game time, to be honest. Rojas is going to be someone that you have to watch. Even old Ben Kalfala, mate, he's always a worry. I watched him against Brisbane. I was like, he's still got good legs on him. He's still playing some decent football.
Yeah. Well, hopefully he can put a good shift in before he signs for the Jets, which I'm hoping is going to happen, but I'm holding out less and less hope the longer it goes on. All right, so get your predictions in, mate. What's the score going to be, and is it going to go to extra time?
Look, it's not going to go to extra time, and I reckon we're going to get them 3-1.
3-1?
Is that what I said last week as well, 3-1?
I think you might have, yeah. That's all right. Nothing if not consistent. All right. And the other one would be the your prediction for the Joe Marsden medalist.
Let's do a clean sweep with Ninkovic.
Yep.
I think he put in a good shift.
He's certainly going to be paying some excess baggage fees for all his trophies when he eventually moves back home.
He also has some meaningless trophies from the fans, I think, too. I know you'll probably get fans player of the year.
Yep.
Voted by all members, and I also think you'll probably get the Cove player of the year as well. So some other trophies for his collection.
Yeah, he's definitely going to be paying excess baggage fees then. All right, mate, no problem. So thanks very much for joining us, mate. Good luck on Sunday. Wishing both of you guys good luck. I'm not going to nail my colours to the mast until game day. But if people want to get involved on Twitter and, you know, pay out on you or congratulate you after the game, mate, how do they get in contact?
Yep, so SSouthie_SFC. Quite happy to have some banter. If I lose, I probably won't reply to you for maybe a week or two.
Yeah, that's all right. It'll be you'll the next time you'll be on will be probably 4 or 5 pints into the Sydney FC postseason awards ceremony. So that's you'll know when that's going to be on. All right, mate. Yeah. Really appreciate you joining us again. And like I said, good luck for Sunday.
No worries, mate. Thanks for your time.
All right, so we're very pleased to be joined here by Jason from the For Vuck's Sake podcast. Mate, Jason, thanks very much for jumping onto the Jetstream podcast.
No problems at all. It's great to be back on the Jetstream podcast.
Yeah, it has been a while. I think it was back in October or something of last year.
Yeah, quite a while ago. I can't remember exactly when, but yeah, it feels like a lifetime ago.
Yeah, you've had many wins and holidays since then, and we we haven't had much, and we've had an early holiday.
Yep.
All right, so... thoughts on the overall season? You finished on a bit of a slide, and you know the obligatory 1-0 win against Central Coast in the final game. But how has the fan base seen the season overall? You seem to get off to a bit of a slow start, then picked it up and sort of charged and looked like you were going to give Sydney a bit of a close race at one point, and then it just sort of seemed to fall away in the final weeks.
Well, yeah, you're right. It was a bit of a slow start, and I think that was punctuated by a bit of a drubbing at the hands of Melbourne City. I think around 2, I think we may have lost 4-0 or something like that. I think last year we had a bit of a clean out of sorts with many of our starting 11 moving on to other teams. So to start off the season, I think there was a bit of a gelling kind of period where players needed to work out how to play against or play with each other. James Tarisi, Marco Rojas coming back into the squad, after a few years away from the Victory. So it took a little while to gel. And then when things started to pick up, we did start to get the results. And we're obviously always one step behind Sydney, and no one was really catching them. So once we did sew up second spot, we did lose some motivation towards the end of the season, which was reflected with those poor results. But then obviously getting the result against Brisbane on Sunday means we are in the grand final. And I think if you ask me to evaluate the season, I think we have to wait until the grand final result, because I think all Victory fans will classify the season as a disappointment if we don't win the grand final. No, we are classified as underdogs, but we do expect to win the grand final every year. So I think we're just waiting to see what happens come Sunday.
Would it really be seen as a disappointment? I mean, considering how far away Sydney ran away with it, you guys had second spot, as you said, sewn up pretty early. I think considering the way you finished and the fact that you were able to bounce back and take advantage of the week off and then put Brisbane away to qualify for the grand final, you'd think that the fan base would see it as a disappointment if you didn't win on Sunday?
I think you're forgetting one thing, and that's the fact that Victory fans are arrogant. We want to win. We definitely want to win, and I think we classify any season that we don't win as a bit of a disappointment. I think going into the game, my personal thoughts is that we are the underdogs and we have nothing to lose. So I guess in one aspect, if we do lose on Sunday against Sydney, I won't be completely distraught over it, but I'll still be disappointed that we didn't capture the championship. Considering the squad that we do have, I mean, I think in my own opinion, we have one of the most potent front thirds in the league with Besar Berisha, who obviously won the Golden Boot, plus James Tirisi and Marco Rojas with Fahid Benkelfala also. So I think that we do have one of the best squads that we've turned out in quite a while. We do lack something in midfield, but I think we do have a squad assembled that is capable of winning a championship. And as I said, when we go into each season, we do expect that.
Yeah, I don't think you can be the only team to claim having arrogant supporters, mate. I think the team you're facing on Sunday could very well have that accusation level. You could actually call the grand final the arrogance bowl if you really wanted to, but it could be quite interesting. Okay, so Kevin Muscat, obviously, he's been there for a little while now, took over from Ange, and he's been, obviously, like we said, he started off a bit slowly at the beginning of the season with the recruitment and getting the team to gel. How are the fan base feeling about Kevin Muscat remaining in the job? Has he got the full support of the supporters? And how much work has he got to do in this off-season? Because it looks like you're going to be turning over some more players again, and they're going to be recruitment's going to be key for you guys.
Yeah, absolutely. I think at the moment there's about four confirmed outs from the team that's going to be starting against Sydney FC. So we've got about four players who are definitely going to be moving on at the end of the season and possibly more. I think, look, it's a week-to-week proposition with Kevin Muscat and the relationship that he does have with the fans. I think he's often made a scapegoat, even by myself personally on my own podcast. I think he does have some inadequacies with, you know, adapting to the changing game pace and different game situations. He doesn't always adapt, and we do lament the fact as well that he doesn't perhaps make substitutions as early as he should to really change the game. So I think it's a week-to-week proposition with Kevin Muscat. You're certainly right. He does have some work to do in the off-season in terms of recruiting, but his track record is pretty good with recruiting. In his, you know, first full year coming coaching the Victory after he took over from Ange Postecoglou, he brought in four or five players who were all really, you know, world-class. I wouldn't say world-class, but certainly for A-League terms, yeah, really class players.
Yeah, decent class, yeah.
Yeah, so I think he's got the pedigree to actually recruit well. So we have full faith in his recruitment capabilities. It's more so the tactical nous that he is lacking in. So yeah, as I said, when things are going well, we love him. But when things aren't going too well, he's often made a scapegoat for Victory fans.
Does he seem to learn from his mistakes? Does it look like have you seen a definite change in him from when he took over to how he is now? Does it look like he's developing that side of his tactics and maybe he's starting to look at improving that side of his game?
Slowly, but I still think he is quite stubborn in his approach. And I think, you know, that's something we talk about a lot in the podcast, is he has a plan A and not enough of a plan B. His plan B is to do plan A better. So I think he is slowly changing, and I think he's got the team around him to perhaps advise him to perhaps not be as hands-on and perhaps take a step back. I think he's a bit of a micromanager behind the scenes. So I think he's starting to learn a little bit about how to delegate his role a bit better. But at the moment, yeah, it's still a bit slow going with his ability to adapt.
Yeah, well, his personality certainly hasn't changed from when he was a player, so I suppose you can't really pick on him for that. But all right, so the semi-final, so it was a 1-0 win against Brisbane down there at Amy Park. Just the one goal, 70 minutes from Berisha. Was it as close a game as the score suggests?
It was pure domination by the Victory, but not the kind of domination that gives me any confidence that will go into the grand final, you know, and have a legitimate chance of winning it. I mean, we were certainly the better team, but there was just a lack of polish and a lack of finishing in the victory front third. It's been quite a while now since Marco Rojas has scored a goal, and obviously he had a blinding start to the season. He was, you know, scoring for fun and, you know, giving off assists at the start of the year, but that seemed to have stagnated in the last few weeks. So he needs to fire up, and I think if you look at the game, we did have the better of it, but it wasn't. Yeah, it wasn't that satisfying or that convincing that we'll actually take that form and do anything within the grand final, in my opinion.
Well, you certainly had quite a few shots. I mean, the goalkeeper, Jamie Young, was definitely a standout for them, made a number of great saves and was, I think, you know, lucky to stay on the pitch after Broxham gave him a sneaky little knee to the head there, which looked pretty nasty. But, you know, I think the... I think you're right. You probably didn't capitalise on as many chances as you could have, but their goalkeeper certainly did stand up and be counted.
Yeah, I'm probably being a bit too harsh on it, but it seems to be a bit of an ongoing problem for Victory over the last 4 or 5 weeks especially. And it might surprise you guys to think that for everything that Borussia has done this season, as Victory fans, we still look on it, look back on it and think of all the chances that he has missed. So, I mean, yeah, it's not just him, but a few other players who are lacking just the finish. And I think we can be a lot more clinical in front of goal, and that's going to be the difference on Sunday. If we're not clinical, we won't win a championship.
Yep. All right. Were there any injuries or other issues from the semi-final that are going to carry over into the grand final?
No, we're going to line up as we did last week, so that the starting 11 won't change, and I think the bench will be pretty much different as well. Sorry, pretty much the same. So I think it's a well settled side going into Sunday.
All right. So the game's 5 p.m. Allianz Stadium. So just quickly run through the head to head. 11 wins to Sydney FC, 17 draws, 13 Melbourne Victory wins. At Allianz, it's 6 wins to Sydney FC, 9 draws overall, and 4 wins to you guys. And the last win against Sydney FC was on the 7th of October last year in a 3-1 win over them. I believe that was home for you guys. So it's been a little while since you've been able to get the result over Sydney FC. What do you think it's going to take for you guys to be able to beat them in the big one?
Well, I think the battle is going to be completely in the midfield. So I think they've obviously got a class midfield with Ninkovic and Brillante and O'Neill. So it's up to Lee Broxham and Valeri to essentially to nullify that midfield power in the Sydney FC squad. So I think that's where the game's going to be, you know, really won or lost for us, because there have been, you know, question marks over our midfield, obviously with Oliver Bozanic, who left mid-year. We're lucky to get rid of him, to be honest, because he wasn't contributing too much. And Lee Broxham has stood up to the plate you know, in superb fashion. So I think the battle will really be won or lost in the midfield. But it's worth noting as well, despite the fact that they have beaten us every time this year, we have actually led twice in those games. So we've given up 2 leads. So we're not too far off the pace. Obviously, Sydney are a cut above, but we're not too far off the pace. So I guess that gives the most optimistic Victory fans cause for some confidence.
Well, do you think, obviously we talked about Kevin's tactical problems before. Do you think he might actually be looking to tweak anything heading into this game? What do you think? Obviously, the previous game plan hasn't really worked because you haven't been able to get the results. Is there any little tweaks you think he might be able to do to enable you to get a better result?
I would love him to, but I don't know if that's ever going to happen with Kevin Muscat. I think he's, as I said, he's just a stubborn manager at the moment. So I don't think he'll change up too much. And to be honest, I'm not too sure what could be changed. I think this system works quite well. It's just perhaps the quality of Sydney just might overrun us in the end. I mean, just looking at the differences between the two benches here, I think the bench with Sydney, obviously, with the ability to bring on Bernie Abini or David Carney or Simon as well, gives them a real edge over our bench as well, which doesn't really contain too much firepower. It contains some, you know, honest hard workers, but doesn't really contain the firepower that's in EFC does. So I think those substitutions will be pivotal if we can try and tweak and, you know, adapt to the changing game plan or what happens during the match, the changing circumstances. But I wouldn't be counting on Kevin Muscat to be changing too many things up, especially leading into a grand final.
Yep, all right. The big narratives, obviously, the story has been during this week in the lead-up to the grand final has been the state of the Allianz pitch. with the rugby union game is going to be on at the previous evening. How much of a factor do you think this is actually going to play into the game?
I think it's going to be an excuse for whoever loses. I'm not too sure how it's going to be. I mean, at the same time, both teams need to play on it. So yep. I don't know who it suits best. You know, Victory like to play a passing game that really relies on a pitch being in immaculate condition. So if anything, that might disadvantage us a little bit. I'm sure it's going to be used by as an excuse for whoever loses. But at the same time, yeah, what can we do? It's been an ongoing issue all year. So I think teams are prepared for it. They know what they're going to get. Let's just hope it's not too badly torn up by the rugby union game the night before.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, our final question before we get to the prediction. Do you see Sydney FC as having any weaknesses? What do you think Kevin's going to have to look to target and exploit?
Well, I'm not too sure, to be honest. I think they're a pretty well-rounded team. I mean, we've seen here throughout the course of the year that they haven't been touched by any team apart from Western Sydney Wanderers.
Yep.
So I think they're a formidable team. I'm having a look over the squad here in front of me, and I can't really see too many weaknesses. Kevin Muscat's a better manager than I, so I'm not too sure what he can look to exploit. I'm hoping that we can just overrun them with our firepower. As I said, I think we've got the best front third in the league. We've certainly shown that with Marco Rojas and Besar Berisha scoring so many goals this season. So I think we just need to overrun them with our own firepower.
All right. Well, time to put the money down, mate. What's the score going to be, and will it go to extra time?
I don't think it'll go to extra time. My head says that Sydney will win, but I'm all about positivity today. So I'm going to hope that Victory pull out a 2-1 win, and I'm going to tip Marco Rojas to get back on the scorer sheet after a lean few weeks.
No worries. And who's going to be the player of the match?
I think Carl Valeri. So he'll be our main man, and he'll be the one that'll be responsible for shutting down Ninkovic. So I think Carl Valeri will be the Joe Marston medalist.
Nice one. Right, mate, really appreciate you joining us. No one knows that you've just stepped off the plane for the US this morning, and you've been running on about zero sleep in the last 2 days. So we really appreciate you making time. What if people want to check out your podcast or get in contact, how can they get in contact with you?
Yep, so we've just released our grand final preview podcast about an hour ago. So if you log on to, for Vuck's Sake, either on Twitter or Facebook, just For Vuck's Sake. And we're also available on Audio Boom or any of the podcast apps that you use.
Nice one. All right, Jason, thanks very much and good luck on Sunday.
Thanks, man. I'm off to sleep now. Bye.
Cheers. Oh, I'm down, Benjamin.